Yeehaw.
Yeehaw.
And we've got the initial announcements, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh. So, I quit smoking like 190 days ago and my throat Woo! Still itches.
What?
Yeah, I might be dying.
Oh, no.
When did it
it's just been itching since then?
Yeah. Well, no, no, it just started itching again recently and I was like, what?
Hmm. That's weird.
Why?
Do you have spots on your throat or anything? Or like, what's going on?
I don't often look at the inside of my throat.
Yeah, well, you should. You see what's down there.
It's a good point. Like, I can't even.
I just
well,
you never know.
All right. It
could be a cigarette just hanging in there.
I know. Well, I've been chewing on toothpicks, and so I feel like I might have, like, swallowed
inhaled too many particles, and, like, they built another toothpick.
Yeah, there's just, like, a really. So I've been swallowing gum. To like hopefully like get all the toothpick part.
There's like a life cycle of this. You chew on the toothpick and then you swallow the gum to get to pass the toothpick.
And then you chew on the toothpick to get the gum out of your teeth. And you know, like I just realized I'm dumb. All right. So in all seriousness,
very important episode.
Very important because it's the anniversary. So it's not the anniversary of the podcast. It's the anniversary of Hunt's Villain itself, the concept. Mm-hmm. So on August 16th, 2015, I posted The Roof, which was like the first episode.
Uh-huh.
And it's about a madman just going in on this dude's log cabin and tearing it apart by hand. He was like, I don't care for your decor.
Was this the story that just prompted you to like, you like, I have to share this kind of thing or what?
Somewhat. When I was,
or just thought this is a really good one to start with, maybe.
Yeah. That was, yeah. Honestly, that was mostly it. I saw that and I was like, everyone in America wants to read this court case. They don't realize it yet, but yes. Every human wants this.
Mm-hmm.
And, it turns out not every human wants this.
A lot of people are trying their very hardest to forget Alabama history, but yeah, we're not going to let them.
Not at all.
It's too amazing. It's
so good.
People in New York love it.
Yeah, apparently. We have like a huge following in New York and
we're
Canada.
Huge in New York. Once we get save up enough money to like Greyhound up there,
yeah,
we're going to be like kings. Very villainous kings.
We'll do SpiceCon.
SpiceCon, yes.
Yeah, as opposed to the Spice Fest.
Everyone will be dressed as a different spice. And I'm kind of surprised we haven't gotten like more like regional spice, you know, authority of the Southeastern emails, stuff like that. Or
yeah,
they're just like randomly on a list, you know.
That would be really fun.
Why not?
Yeah. But so that's the big one. 1 year of Hunt's Villain. Mm-hmm. You recently had the board meeting.
We did. Yeah, live
spice cast.
Yeah, office kind of chatter with random people on the internet. It was pretty interesting. We had like a lot of people that tuned in and were like, wait, what is Spice Radio? And we're like, those are exactly the people we want to talk to because they have yet to be enlightened. But they were enlightened on Saturday.
Inspicened.
They were spiced up. Their life was spiced up.
Everything got a little bit too spicy.
It could have been overly spicy. I think after by the end it was like we had to cut ourselves off. But
yeah.
But you've been really busy this you've been educating the youths.
Yeah,
and,
man.
Like you've been burning it up, burning the midnight oil and the daytime oil and the midday oil.
I am
and most oils.
Very, very tired all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, working up at the U.S. Space and Rocket Center. I don't know if y'all knew that, but I don't just do history. I also do science.
Uh-huh.
Hey. Recently, we had our, 12-day thing, which is where we have, like, the coolest nerds on the planet. Which is, it seems like an oxymoron, but it's not.
Right.
So, and I just spent like 2 weeks teaching them, and I was so sad when they left.
Oh.
And it was bad. I cried, like, going 70 on the back to my house. I was just like, I'm gonna miss you. right?
And that's like more time than you usually get with the the youngins too, right?
Oh yeah, it is.
You get to know them, and
yeah, it's double the trouble in the sadness.
Most but, definitely.
Yeah, and they all Googled my name. They were like John O'Brien. And so a bunch of them did actually find this podcast.
Very cool.
Yeah. They just came up to me. It was the episode we did about Rhoda Barnett.
Nice.
And they were like...
They got a good one, too.
Yeah, they were like, John...
You know they'd find that one.
I know. It can't be, like, any of the wholesome ones or
the
really
serious ones. Or, yeah. Yeah, it's going to be the most hogsiest, ballsiest to the wallsiest. I can't think of any other word for it. Yeah.
So they come up to me and they're like, hey, John, says here, you know, an hour and a half worth of stuff about 1820s hookers. And I'm like, and they were in front of a manager at the time. And I was just like, damn it. So
technically, yes,
but let's not get into this. So speaking of other things that could get me fired. No.
Yeah. How do we segue into today's episode gracefully? I don't know if it's a possibility.
There's no
gynecology
way.
Guys.
Okay. You did it.
It's as easy as that.
So fun fact, there was an Alabama doctor named J. Marion Sims. Okay. So J. Marion Sims.
Marion Sims.
Yeah. Marion Sims. And Marion Sims lived in Alabama from like 1835 to 1849. Right. And so we're going to be examining, those years of his life. But while he was down here, he accidentally invented an entire field of medicine. Just
that's how it happens in Alabama. When it happens in Alabama, it's an accident.
Yeah, it wasn't like through careful consideration and conduct.
Like, no, it would be good.
Stumbled into it.
Right.
And so, but what I really want to do, I showed you when I came in, I usually...
Man, plethora of facts.
Yeah, usually my fast facts, which is what I call them.
You should trademark that.
I should.
Fast facts with John O'Brien.
Fast facts. So usually my fast facts, the sheet for that is like one page or a page and a half. This is like four pages because a lot of my material came from his autobiography, The Story of My Life by J. Marion Sims, which came out in like 1884.
Right.
Like, so what happens was he becomes like a world famous doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So after he like leaves Alabama, he goes and he sets up a clinic in New York for poor immigrant women.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes to Britain and like,
yeah,
does surgeries on Irish women and just tours Europe, giving lectures and doing like vagina surgeries.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everyone was just like, oh my God, J. Marion Sims.
Right, right.
And then when he dies, his kids are like, I guess we're going to put out an autobiography.
We'll accidentally put out an
autobiography. And so, Story of My Life, J. Marion
Sims. Yeah, and I am sure I have heard of the gentleman before, because I think some people call him, like, the father of modern gynecology.
Yeah, and I mean,
there, and which is, yeah, yeah.
There's statues.
There are statues. You know you've made it.
I was going to save this for the end. There's a statue of this dude in Central Park.
Nice.
Like New York City. Central Park.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, and that's pretty of like a progressive thing kind of to come out of Alabama too, like women's health, the cutting edge of women's health.
What?
In 1830, of course.
Yeah. But I mean, you know. Hey,
we did it at some point, guys.
You can't win them all. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to just talk very in-depth about this timeline. So even though he only lived in Alabama from like 1835 to 1849, our story starts in 1833.
A bygone era of 1833.
Yes.
Listen close, PBS.
You always get, like, whenever I'm like, our story starts, you always, like, lean in a little bit. You're like, does it start? It doesn't. John's just going to talk for a little while longer. All right. So, April 1833, a young doctor walked up to his father in Lancaster, South Carolina. He grieved at the deaths of his first two patients and had recently been turned down by a woman he loved. Right? And this is this will be, of course, Teresa, who he later marries. But he was just super sad.
Yeah, it's a bad place.
Yeah, I think he was her cousin, because there's a lot of talk about them in his autobiography when they're younger, like playing like ball together, like just b-ball,
right?
You know,
throwing some hoops,
yeah,
with your cousin
in 1830, in like 1810 South Carolina,
right?
But yeah, young doctor, first two patients have died. Recently turned bound by the woman he loved. Father, began the young man. The father looked up and listened as his eldest son talked about opportunity and work and possibly giving him a small loan so that he might travel to a new place, a place called Alabama. The father nodded along, and when the young man finished ranting, he said, "My son, are you crazy?"
I was waiting for that.
Yeah.
Go to Alabama in 18.
No. You're not going to Alabama.
I know you had a bad day, like a really rough day.
Two people died. The love of your life turned you down. You're not going to Alabama.
That's not a good. That's not a way out, guys.
No. So, and like, it's great because when you have really detailed notes and stuff like that, like just that moment. That, my son, are you crazy? So he eventually, he works some more in South Carolina, right? He saves up money. He eventually figures out how to stop killing people all the time.
Right.
Because, you know, your
the first level of doctor, of being a doctor in 18. Like, one out of five, you're doing great. Like,
this is hilarious for me because you're a nurse.
Right.
Right? Like,
sorry, guys. You get to...
He eventually stopped out of killing people, and you're like, the first level of being a doctor, level one, complete.
First, do no harm. It's in the books, right? It's in there.
Oh, you're a delight, Ben Job. So, dude eventually saves up enough money to travel to Alabama, and he almost immediately hates it.
Yeah.
He just regrets it.
Wait, what was I thinking?
Why am I in Alabama?
A violent, scary place with probably a ton of mosquitoes. I'm just guessing that in 1800s. Did I foresee this? This was not.
You did great. All right, so.
I know how Alabama is. It's a violent, scary place with mosquitoes.
On November 3rd, he wrote to Teresa, like the, you know, the his cousin that wouldn't marry him.
Yeah.
And so he's in Mount Meigs, right?
Okay.
So Mount Meigs is, it used to be like a thriving community outside of Montgomery.
Oh, okay.
But it now is just a juvenile correction center.
That's quite a downgrade.
Yeah. So like when I was driving through Montgomery a few months ago to go do research down there and I saw Mount Meigs, I was like, oh my God.
We're going to see all this beautiful hamlet.
Oh my God.
Oh wait, it's a...
And I drive through, it's just a juvenile correction facility. And I'm like, oh my God.
Oh.
Went from, oh my God, to, oh my God. All right. So he goes in and he calls Mount Meigs a fine stand for a physician because it's a violent mosquito. Mount Meigs
itself.
There's lots
of patients in Alabama, is what we're getting at.
Mount Meigs itself is just a violent mosquito. It's not mosquito infested. It's just a giant, it punches you and sucks your blood. All right. So he planned to go throughout the Black Belt looking for patients. So although the Deep South provided plenty of diseases to treat and explore, he found the people dissipated and brutal.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice way of putting it.
Yeah, he calls us brutal. And I'm like, you're from South Carolina. But, you know, he's from like gentry doctor.
Right,
South Carolina.
Yeah.
Yeah. At this very moment, he wrote Teresa, there are about a dozen or 20 men of the most profane cast, drunk and fighting in the street below my window.
Sounds like he came to Alabama to be.
Yep. And then, and with a Negro... playing a banjo, I believe it is so called, in their midst. So
I love it. In the midst.
Yeah.
Like, the guy's probably just walking through and like, good, keep going, guys. I'm still playing.
There's just a small riot. Right? Just picture, like, J. Marion Sims. He's up there. He's riding his cousin. And
I long for your scent, dear woman, but down below me.
20 men engage in a brawl.
In combat, fisticuffs, and yep. banjo.
And a lone black man just walks through the midst with a banjo, right? One of my...
It's probably Saturday. It's just Saturday.
Yeah. One of my least favorite things is, like, whenever I read old documents written by, like, educated white guys.
Yes.
And I'm just like, there are so many words that start with an N.
Yeah.
So...
You get to wade through prejudice for, like, generations. That's your job, John. Yeah. Welcome to Huntsvillein.
Yay. So although he was like, at first, right? 2 weeks later, he writes Teresa again, and he confirms his original suspicions about the place and its people. It's a land of chronically sick and drunken hooligans with a taste for the banjo.
Yes.
But determined that Alabama has its redeeming qualities. And this is kind of a thing that happens. People come down and they're like, this place is weird.
Yeah.
And everyone has a gun.
Yes.
But I love it.
Right.
Yeah, right? So just, we get under your skin and inside of your soul. So 1836, right? He's been down here. He's been a doctor. He's been kind of goofing around. He's hunting a lot. He's just hanging out with the boys. In March...
Getting partly Alabamanized.
He's that gonna culture. Get there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So March 1836, the last remnant of the Creek Nation rises up in Alabama. Mm-hmm. All right? And so for those who know their chronology, like... 1835 or so, they find gold in northern Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
The Creek Nation is, like, you know, Trail of Tears out of existence. And so the last Creek people are going to be kicked out of Alabama and southern Georgia in, like, 1837. And so this is...
The last gasp, kind of.
Yeah, like, you know, they're like, we're not going down without a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And so... The Creek Nation starts attacking stagecoaches along the old Federal Road, and they actually manage to go and they close parts of the road. So suddenly all of southern Alabama is just cut off from the rest of the United States, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anything in Alabama south of Huntsville is suddenly just like, oh, shit.
Right.
This is not good.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, I guess let's have a race war. And so
I guess we're cranking it up.
Yep, that's what happens. And so Marion Sims, he joins with a band of 120 other men from the Mount Meigs area, and they go off and they're like, we're gonna fight some Creek people.
Mm-hmm.
And they never even do. They just
wander around in the woods for...
Yeah, they just wander around in the woods. They come across a Creek town, Tuskegee.
Mm-hmm.
So they come to Tuskegee, like, you know, before Tuskegee was like, hey, one of the main centers of black life in the Southeast. They come to Tuskegee back when it's a Creek town, and they just make camp outside of the town, and they're like just sitting there for like half a month just watching them. And they're like, you better not try and do anything.
Right.
And all the people in Tuskegee are like, you don't try and do anything. And so it's just like, it's really interesting.
Standoff kind of thing.
And so eventually, the actual U.S. federal army comes and relieves them. Right. Mm. They come up from Mobile and they like cut a path and they'd like go and round up all these guys that have been raiding stagecoaches, and they send all the drunk, weird guys from Montgomery home.
Yeah.
And this includes J. Marion Sims, who, the entire time he had been, like, tending to the wounded because someone fell over and got impaled on a bunch of things.
They drank too much.
Yeah.
They were fighting amongst themselves.
They were just doing Alabama stuff. The banjo player was hurt. J. Marion Sims, he goes, and he's just been a physician and, like... Mm-hmm. But he goes home and he's like, and we were instilled with the full honors of war. It's like,
great.
Sure.
You did great.
Sure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm proud of you. So, but after that, he has this position as like the cool local doctor that will totally go fight Indians with you.
Right, right. And
everyone loves this guy. So all of a sudden, like, his business is booming, right?
Right.
He comes to Alabama, like, in November 1835, hates all of it. By March 1836, he's like, this is great. I've never had such a, like, supportive group of other angry white men before.
He just had to show up at the monthly race war and, like...
Yeah, and suddenly, you know, he and the boys were...
Right on top of it.
It's so sad. So anyways, in June, a massive, like the largest malaria outbreak in Alabama history happens.
Wow. Which is no joke back then.
No joke. And so you were talking about mosquitoes earlier.
Yep.
Yes.
They weren't just a problem for us guys. Mosquitoes have been harrying Alabama's. That feels good to me, though, like, knowing that they've been having that issue for so long.
Yeah, I'm really glad my ancestors had malaria.
I can just, but at least I can, like, commiserate with them, except I don't get malaria, so. Fingers crossed.
What are we worried about, Zika?
Yeah, I mean.
What, like, I think 70 people in Alabama have had Zika by this point?
Mm-hmm.
Get out of my face.
If it ain't malaria, ain't nothing.
Yep. Mosquito-borne illness, my left foot. So, malarial outbreak, and it's like the largest one ever. And, you know, he's talking about, like, there weren't enough well people to take care of the sick people, mm-hmm. and everyone's dying.
Yeah.
So, excuse me.
That's all right.
Orange.
That's the taste.
Never mind, it's a game. So September 4th, 1836, he goes to the plantation of John Ashurst.
Mm-hmm.
And John Ashurst was the guy that was the dude in charge of all of the crazy dudes from Mount Meigs. Like the commanding officer of that troop. And he goes to that dude's plantation, and John Ashurst is like, now look, I got about 30 enslaved humans. I doubt he used that word, mm-hmm. but I got about 30 enslaved humans that are down with malaria. And so he goes and he looks at them and he's like, oh, well, you know, and he goes inside of their like super cramped cabin.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, they got malaria.
Right. about that.
Nothing.
Everybody's got malaria right now.
All of South Alabama has malaria, but yeah. I don't know what to do for you, John Ashurst.
Mm-hmm.
But I really want to talk about why he included the fact that he visited a malarial cabin.
Yeah.
So, as you know, malaria just comes from the Latin malaria.
Yeah.
Bad air.
Yep.
And so people used to think that it wafted off of swamps, or if you were in cramped conditions.
Spreading around. Yeah.
Exactly. And so by telling his readers at the time, right? And you got to remember, his thing came out in 1884. Literally earlier that year, Alphonse Laveron, who was a French military physician, realized mm-hmm. that, oh my God, malaria is spread by skeeters.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the same year that his book comes out.
Yeah,
people realize the link between mosquitoes and malaria. So prior to that, everyone was like, it's bad air, which is why people like to go and live on mountains, because there was less mosquitoes, and they didn't realize that.
Right.
But they're like, the air's better.
You don't get malaria up here for some reason.
For some reason. It has to be the air. We're far away from the swamp.
It smells good.
Yeah.
You can smell it.
And so by telling his readers, by alerting his readers to the fact that, oh, I went into a cramped slave cabin.
Right, and I'm fine.
No, he got malaria.
Oh, he got malaria. Never mind.
He got real bad malaria. he nearly died. So by telling his readers that, like, he went into a really cramped slave cabin, what he's implicitly saying is, my contact with this
don't do
race
that.
Of people gave me the malaria.
Okay.
Right? But, you know, obviously he was bitten by a mosquito,
mm-hmm.
like, a month before that, because that's the incubation period for malaria. So, anyways, dude gets bad malaria. Mm. Like, legit, I'm gonna die malaria. Right? And he ends up staying at the plantation of John Ashurst for a lot of this.
Right.
And he, so there's a young slave girl, enslaved girl named Anarcha, which, by the way, righteous name.
Yeah,
it's like Furiosa level.
Yeah, Anarcha.
Anarcha. And so Anarcha stays with him and, like, helps care for him,
mm-hmm.
brings him bread and water, bathes him, things like that. Just kind of like...
Probably keeps him alive while he is totally incapacitated.
Literally, Anarcha keeps this dude alive. So there's this guy named Dr. Lucas. And Dr. Lucas is a really old doctor. Right? And so Dr. Lucas comes and he's like, oh, you got the malaria. And so he's like, yeah, I know I have malaria. And so there's this part where Dr. Lucas tells Anarcha, literally, bring me a string and a little cotton and a bowl. I'm going to draw a little blood from the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so Dr. Lucas still practices heroic medicine, which is where we get this idea of bleeding people or making them regurgitate.
Letting and all that.
Yeah, it's literally heroic medicine because you had to, like, live through
heroically
it.
Survive.
Yeah, and so...
That was before that, like, keep your patients alive thing. That was the first level.
Yeah. So this is like...
You gotta kill them a little bit, and then they'll be all right.
Yeah, that was the thinking, actually.
Yeah, just,
like,
you know...
First, do no harm, but wait. First, do a lot of harm.
Yeah.
So, heroic medicine, you go in, you do very dramatic procedures, mm-hmm. and somehow that'll fix them.
It's going to kickstart you into fighting for your life, and hopefully you're going to live.
Exactly.
It's a technique.
Yeah, so he's like, bring me a bowl and a needle and mm-hmm. all this. We're going to take the blood from this man. And, it like, Anarcha is just looking at Sims, and Sims looking at Anarcha, and he's like, no.
Don't do it.
I'm not doing that.
Right.
That's dumb. Right? And so it's beautiful because the 1836 malaria outbreak, because he'd been running all over Montgomery County and he'd been all over the Black Belt
mm-hmm.
and he had seen how, like, people were dying, but people were usually dying because a heroic doctor was attending them.
Mm.
And so he puts this together in his mind. He's like, wait,
that's not working.
All the old medical traditions are stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a thing he carries with him for the rest of his life, which is why I talk about the 1836 malaria outbreak.
Yeah.
And so what ends up happening is an English dude shows up, Tom Coster, right? So Thomas B. Coster, an Englishman, and Tom Coster has quinine. Now, mm-hmm. quinine is just starting to become popular in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the main people making quinine popular are the Fearn brothers and a Dr. Erskine up in Huntsville. And what they are doing, you know Fearn up on Montesano?
I don't know. The
the street?
The street, yeah. Yeah,
Fearn mm-hmm. Street, that's named after them.
Okay.
Also, they named Montesano.
All right.
Mountain of Health.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I actually, all the towns that the Fearn brothers founded have, like, Spanish names. And so I have this theory that, like, the Fearn family were just massive Hispanophiles.
Right.
Yeah. And so, like, Thomas Fearn married a woman named Maria, which doesn't help his case at all.
Yeah.
Right. But, so massive Hispanophiles, I think. But, so the Fearns were, like, local Huntsville doctors. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. Erskine was also a local Huntsville doctor. Right, which is why that really swanky hotel, the Hotel Erskine.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the middle of the...
Yeah,
in the middle of downtown.
Huntsville.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's named after him.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, and so they had been coming.
All sorts of namesakes.
Exactly, right? And so the Ferens and Erskine had been coming up with these really interesting ideas mm-hmm. about how do you fight malaria?
Yeah.
Because, like, Robert Fern, who was the main doctor brother, Scottish immigrant, he was real crazy.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, and he's in Huntsville during, like, a massive malaria outbreak.
Right.
And he has quinine, and he's a huge Hispanophile, and he knows that, hey, the Spanish have been using quinine to treat malaria for centuries. And so what he does is he just goes and he starts, and if you've ever, like, I know I was about to say if you've ever read his diary, but I think, like, nine people have read his diary. Because no one's transliterated it yet.
Right.
So Fern's diary, he's just going around Huntsville and just stuffing people full of opium and quinine.
Yeah, and seeing what's happening.
Yeah, and he's like, well, they seem to not be dying.
Right.
But do that in a Scottish accent, and you'll have Robert Fern. And so when J. Marion Sims, you know, he talks about Fern and Erskine in his, like, autobiography, and he actually calls their medical practice quininism.
Uh-huh. Like, they had just pumping into everybody.
Yeah. Like, they just had a little cult, little quinine cult, which I would join because I hate malaria and I actually drink gin and tonics to help prevent malaria because it has quinine in it.
All right.
So quininism.
Yeah. There's nothing more gin.
Yeah. So if you live in Alabama,
drink the gin.
Well, the tonic water is the thing. But mix it with gin. Mix it with gin.
Yeah.
Or, like, whiskey.
It's not good on its own. It needs the gin.
It really needs the gin. So he doesn't die because a British dude showed up and was like, I have some quinine for you.
Right. Much better than the guy with the strings. That's
that guy sucked. So, and he goes and he survives and he suddenly has all these new medical ideas.
Right.
Right. Like, he's
expands his horizons.
Exactly. Like, nearly dying from malaria did so much for this guy's personality. And in December of that year, he finally convinces his cousin to marry him.
The quinine gave him the courage.
Hey, man, they both have, like, a similar I'm going to say it, though. Quinine courage. Quinine. That liquid courage. He was just drinking gin and tonics.
It was just the gin.
It was the gin. So.
So does he, like, just import her from South Carolina, I guess?
Yeah, he just goes up and gets her.
That's doubly hard. Convince her to marry you, but also, by the way, move to this place where I've talked about, you know, what goes down, down south.
There's just been riots and people
malaria,
in the street.
There's malaria. There's, like, violence, race wars.
And he was like,
come on down.
Yeah, baby.
It at least made him much more persuasive or something.
Exactly. And so finally, 1836, marries Teresa.
Mm-hmm.
Teresa Sims is her name now. And they're, like, going, practicing medicine. And after a few more years, he feels like he's outgrown Mount Meigs.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I'm going to move to Lowndes County, Alabama. And
big city, Lowndes County.
Crazy Lowndes County, right? So Teresa's brother has a plantation in Lowndes County. So, like, his other cousin. And he was just going to, like, be like, yeah, we run in Lowndes, man.
Right.
And so, yeah, it'll be good to the whole family. They're going to get to be close together. Besides, Lowndes County is a horrifying, hellish place. Full of sickness, right? It's, like, even sicker than, like, Montgomery County.
Right.
Yeah, like, it's just, it's awful, right? Human misery abounds in Lowndes.
Right. Can't wait.
It rhymes. Human misery abounds in Lowndes. I feel like they should put
come
that
visit
on a
Lowndes. Human misery abounds.
Yeah. So he's literally at the general store, like, getting stuff together for, like, the trip to Lowndes County, and he runs into an alcoholic named Dr. Goff. He's, like, also a physician, because, like, Montgomery County is just full of physicians.
Montgomery County's drunkest physician.
That, yep, so that's Dr. Goff. And Dr. Goff, like, spends all of his time drinking and playing cards and, like, gambling and hunting. And then on the
bloodletting little bit on the side.
Then on the weekends, he does, like, really mediocre medicine, right? And so Dr. Goff had recently returned from Lowndes County because he was out there doing the rounds in Lowndes.
Yeah, yeah.
So many things rhyme with Lowndes. All right, so he was out there doing the rounds in Lowndes, right?
Yeah.
And he's just like, it was the worst place I've ever seen.
You're gonna love it.
There was nothing but misery and death and malaria. Surely no young doctor who's starting a family should go for it.
Right, right. Expose himself to such things.
Yeah, and so he's got like a young son and daughter by this time. And by the way, can I just talk about how J. Marion Sims was the weirdest dude? Because like when his son died, right? When his first son dies in like 1850 or something. Mm-hmm. First son dies. He gets like a paragraph.
Right.
Dead son gets a paragraph.
Right.
J. Marion Sims gets the worst case of diarrhea he's ever had. It's 10 pages. It's an epic
true
journey.
To his medical. He's like, you know, he died, and yeah, he died. It was over.
But let me tell you.
Let me tell you.
Like, it's a 10-page epic journey about how, like, he travels from New Orleans to New York to take the good water and upstate. And, like, I'm just
oh
like...
Oh, my gosh.
What are you doing, J. Marion Sims? Stop.
That's
pooping.
A terrible road trip.
I know, right? He, like, goes to, like, the Sweet Springs in Mississippi right. and drinks from, like, a sacred well. And I'm like, you're a horrible doctor.
The sulfur.
He does. Delicious. He eats so much sulfur. This man eats more sulfur than anyone I've ever read about. All right. So Dr. Goff, they're in the general store. Dr. Goff is like, it's horror on earth. Literally the worst
Nothing
place.
Nothing like this.
You will hate it. And J. Marion Sims is like, all right, well, I guess I'm going to move to Montgomery. And so he just does.
Yeah,
he like just moves his entire family into Montgomery. So he goes like 10 miles over.
Mm-hmm.
And like...
chase the sickness.
Yeah. So he's like, I'm going to go into Montgomery. And so on December 13th, and here's the thing. J. Marion Sims, once again, the weirdest dude. This is a guy in
the weirdest father of modern gynecology. The real story.
I just snorted. That's how dumb this is. So, all right. So we already know the guy was like, I'm going to, he talks a lot about bodily functions. I think
that's
the thing that got me, why I'm like so enamored of this
straight
man.
But
he's all, he would wait. Like if he had to do something important and he knew that there was going to be a Friday the 13th in that month, he would wait. Until it was Friday the 13th to do it.
Just to see what happened. You're like, come on, bring it.
No, he thought it was the luckiest day.
Oh, he thought it was lucky? Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Like,
everybody else is doing it all wrong.
Yeah. Like, right.
Every other day is terribly unlucky, but the 13th?
Yeah. So, like, that was his thing, man. He was
he just smashed
super...
did everything on, like, yeah, I've got 80 surgeries, and I'm just going to get it all, line them up. It's Friday the 13th, guys. Let's get it done.
I mean, yeah. So, like, any important life event, right? If that month started on a Sunday, he would just chill for, like, 2 weeks.
Right.
He'd be like, it's coming.
Having a baby boy, it's coming on that day.
Yeah. And
it's
so,
work out.
Yeah. So, like, everyone else, you know, in the English-speaking world in the 1840s was like, oh,
super
Friday
superstition,
the 13th,
yeah.
And he was like, I love it. So... guess when he, like, starts his practice in Montgomery.
Is it Friday the 13th?
It is December, Friday the 13th.
Ah,
Friday,
yeah,
December 13th, 1840. He sets up his practice in Montgomery. And so he's in Montgomery, and he's, like, just lamenting the fact that he moved to Montgomery. And I'm like, J. Marion Sims, you need to stop being so whiny. All right? So he's in Montgomery, and he's like, I had to start from the bottom, right? He doesn't have, like, a bunch of old war buddies to bring him.
Yeah.
So what he does is he actually targets Montgomery's Jewish families and the free blacks, and he becomes the physician for those groups.
Right.
And so, and obviously he doesn't call them free blacks.
Yeah.
He's like, free, horrifying word.
Right.
Right. And so the Jews, he's like, they were a very clannish people. And I just had to get one elderly Jewish man that was well respected and all that. And I mean, you do the same thing for any ethnic group. Mm-hmm. If you want to, like,
right, right.
You get the most respect.
They took a peepaw. Like, yeah. They took care of peepaw.
Yeah.
I mean, he's cool.
And he's just like spending all this time making Jews seem way more exotic. But like Montgomery was founded by a Jewish guy.
Yeah.
Like there have always been Jews in Montgomery.
Right.
Right. And so he's just going out of his way to like really step into that Orientalist role and be like the Jews. And it's like, no, dude, it's just they're Jews in Alabama. They're like.
Everybody in Alabama's brutal and crazy.
Yeah.
That's the one unifying factor.
They ride a horse just as good as you, bud. Right? So, yeah. So he goes and he's like, I had to start from the bottom. And I'm like, dude, you cornered the market on like two entire ethnic groups. That's not really the bottom.
Yeah.
Right? You're not like begging hobos to come get an examination in your like surgery theater. So... But, you know, it's just like that racism leaking through.
Yeah.
So he goes, establishes that, becomes like super well respected among like the Jewish and free black communities. Mm-hmm. Right. And once you get the Jews and the free blacks in 1840s Alabama, clearly all the rich white guys follow.
Right.
Which is actually what happened in this case. Uh-huh. Right. I thought I was being sarcastic, but I was like, wait, John, that's exactly what happened. Right. So. He becomes known for doing crazy experimental surgeries and doing all this new stuff, and people are staying alive somehow magically. And he's like, just not bleeding them is the big thing. Like everyone else,
we're doing everything but bleeding people, and it's doing really good.
You know, if I don't take out all of your blood, like, I don't know how.
Leave it in there. I don't even mess with it.
Yeah. And so. He's doing all of this stuff.
Yeah, yeah, just trying new things. And...
Yeah, trying new things. He's reading, like, cutting-edge journals, right? Mm-hmm. And so eventually he gets this reputation, and he talks about, like, people from all over southern Alabama coming to see him.
Yeah.
And how, like, you would just see a really sick person on top of a bunch of cotton bales, and people would go grab him, and he would have to go down to Cotton Row in the middle of Montgomery, and they would like take him off the bale, and he'd be like, what's your illness? And they're like, he got stabbed by a hog 12 days ago.
And, we heard you're really good, so.
And the guy has blood poisoning and he dies horribly. Anyways.
Well, yeah, because he went 12 days without doing anything to it.
They waited for the 13th, man. You know, like.
Give it a couple weeks. Like, I got some lucky day coming up.
Yeah. So, 1845 rolls around, right?
Yeah. Did he include. I wonder if he include that guy specifically because he's like, these people are getting ridiculous.
Dude.
They're bringing me. Some guy got gored by a bull, like, in upper Alabama and then floated down the river. Just hoping that was going to work out for him.
I mean, people did stuff like that. It's the same reason that he went to Mississippi specifically to drink some type of water because he had bad diarrhea. Like,
But he probably was still better off than with the heroic doctor, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Floating down the river in the sun. Like, you're doing way better than you could be.
So eventually, this is what ends up happening, though. He gets this reputation as being, like, the dude.
Right, right.
All right. So, a lady named Margaret C. Right? Margaret C. So, Margaret C. is originally from North Carolina, but her family moved to Lowndes County.
Oh, yeah. The heart of darkness.
It's, yeah. It's where, like, human goodness stops. Mm. Like, just the borders of that county. I don't know. Yeah. We haven't found any Native American, like, settlements. Archaeological settlements in Lowndes County. No, I'm joking. We have.
On Friday 13th.
And yeah.
It's when you establish your account. You're Lowndes County.
We all live.
It was so close. It was almost a full sentence.
It was... That was me burping. That's not a sound humans make.
Speaking in Lowndes. That was the native tongue of Lowndes County.
It's a language made up entirely of like muffled screams.
We're all dying here. Guys, in Lowndes. It's not good.
All right.
So she moved to Lowndes County, immediately had some terrible affliction.
I mean, yeah. So she comes to Sims, right? And so it's actually really interesting because when she shows up, in the middle of the town. She's like, "Where's Marion Sims?" And everyone's like, "He's over there."
"Take me to Marion Sims." And that Lowndes accent.
Yeah, that Lowndes voice. And so she comes up to Marion Sims and she's wearing a veil.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's like, Alabama.
You don't wear stuff like that in Alabama.
No, you don't wear unnecessary clothing in Alabama, right?
Unless it's a banjo, you don't wear it.
So she's wearing a veil.
Mm-hmm.
And she comes up and she's like, "I have something I want you to look at."
Straight from Lowndes.
And he's like, "What is it you need me to see?" And so she lifts up the veil and she actually has a hair lip.
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But it was like a bad hair lip.
Oh, okay.
And so he goes and he meets with a local dentist named like whatever. Dr. Whatever. It's actually in the notes. It's a Bellingy. I'm joking. Mm-hmm. But so Dr. Bellingy, and they go and they come up with an experimental surgery and they're like, "We're going to fix that hair lip." And they do. They like become the first people to fix a hair lip.
Nice.
Right. And so just all these things building on top of each other.
Right.
When finally he gets confronted with his greatest challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So people had been sending enslaved women with vesico-vaginal fistulas to him for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And vesico just means like, or vesico or however you want to say it, just means bladder. It's just Latin for bladder. And so what happens is during birth, super stressed.
Yeah.
Part of the uterine wall is torn. And so the bladder just leaks urine into the vagina constantly, which like causes further tissue damage.
Right.
And it's just horrifying. Like it's a terrible way to live.
Yeah, no doubt.
And so people had been sending enslaved women who had had really violent births and had gotten these like fistulas to, they'd been sending them to Dr. Sims for a while. And Sims had always been like, "Well, there's nothing I can really do for you.
Yeah.
You should rest for a few days and then go home."
Mm-hmm.
Right. So after he does this like super experimental surgery and gets like, whoa, famous, people start sending more. And he's like, "There's still nothing I can do. You need to go home."
Yeah.
But in June of 1845, a hog lay along the roadside in Montgomery.
Mm.
Right. Pigs, very important feature of Alabama history.
Yeah, yeah, like we spoke about earlier.
We had an entire podcast about pigs. So in June of 1845, a hog lay along the roadside in Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
So Mrs. Merrill, who is a local woman who makes all of her money by taking in washing, things like that. So she does laundry for people, which is like a thankless, horrifying job, but she does it. So she rode her horse along the same road. The hog charged at the horse. It just decided, "I am going to mess this horse's day up."
These are the wily Alabama hogs that we talked about.
Yeah, right.
They're just angry and brutal, just like the people in Alabama. They're crazy. They'll attack anything.
Yeah, these aren't like the pink, like nice pigs.
The cute little curly ones.
No, these are like lean and covered in like bristles and like there's probably an arrow sticking out of it somewhere. Right, so this is a mean, mean hog. And so it just charged Mrs. Merle, right? Mm-hmm. Charged her and her horse. And the horse is obviously terrified of, like, this demon pig. And it, like, throws her off of it, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so she doesn't break any bones.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't, like, experience anything except for a retroversion of the uterus.
Ouch.
Yeah. So locals immediately go and they're like, "Wait, someone had a weird injury.
Mm-hmm.
Time to get Marion Sims."
Yeah.
And so they go and they get the doctor and he comes running. So he goes to Mrs. Merrill and he feels this instant pang of regret. if there was, and this is a literal quote, if there was anything I hated, he later wrote, it was investigating the organs of the female pelvis.
Uh-huh. Father of modern gynecology.
Father of modern gynecology.
Really hated that.
Did not like looking at vaginas. Mm-mm. It was like his least favorite thing. So he goes and he's like, well, I'm going to have to manipulate this uterus. I'm going to have to figure out how to get it back into place. And so the only contemporary way to like handle a retroverted uterus at the time was to have them get into a genu pectoral position, which is just on your hands and knees.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm like, what? Just say on your hands and knees, old medical textbook. So on your hands and knees. And the doctor would be like manipulating the inside of the vagina while also sticking a finger into the anus to manipulate that, because you could like get like some leverage and like twist it, right?
Yeah, yeah, flip it around, I reckon.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the idea.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. Sims proved hesitant to do so, having only the previous week put his thumb in another man's rectum for a medical emergency. So he's already...
I'm tired of that, guys. Why does he really invent surgery over this? Is that what this is coming to? What am I calling this one, too? You have a look on your face. I'm getting close.
Luckily, no. Luckily, he does not, like, invent an entire
just,
branch
like,
of...
You know what? You know what we could do is just not do that. Like, what if we just used, like, some
what if
twine?
I got a knife? And, like, no, he doesn't invent an entire branch of surgery just to avoid...
I'll give it a little credit.
Like, putting his finger in this lady's butt to get leverage to, like, retrovert the uterus. That's not what we call... That's
but
not
just
what's
a week ago, he had for a gentleman...
Yeah, just, you know, I mean, he did his job. All right. So what he does is he's like, but I didn't do that. I didn't put my thumb in her butt. Like, he makes a really big deal out of it. Like, and
I don't know what people are saying, guys, but I didn't.
At no point in time did I, in order to, like, retrovert that uterus, put my thumb in anyone's butt. Like, that did
don't,
not.
Don't worry.
And I'm just, it's great because it's like
he's apologizing for all the strangest things as a doctor. He's like, don't worry, I didn't do that.
I wasn't really into this. Like, dude, you're a doctor.
It's, yeah.
But you know, like, you do have like all the societal pressures.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
A lot of people thought that he was like just a giant pervert, but he was like, he got into it because of the time and the place. And you know,
yeah, well, if you have probably hundreds of people suffering, it's like...
That's my job.
Right, right.
Yeah. So, eventually, after much exertion and groans of agony, and this is a quote, it was as if I had put two fingers into a hat and worked them around without touching the substance of it.
Hmm.
And I was just like, what?
Okay.
But either way, what happens is he manages to retrovert the uterus.
Oh, okay.
And she feels like a great relief and she sighs and she's like, oh my God, I feel so much better. Thank you, doctor. Mm-hmm. But then there was an explosion.
What? What?
But then there was an explosion from Mrs. Merrill's vagina.
Mm.
Sims learned that by using air to inflate the vagina, one might be able to perform surgeries and procedures upon it, otherwise thought impossible. So she was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry I farted. But it wasn't, you know, it was like,
yeah, yeah.
It was an expulsion of air from like an organ. It happens, right? It's a perfectly normal thing. But just the fact that he goes through all of this and he's like, I did not put my finger. But then... And just the phrase, because it's in quotations.
There was an explosion, quote unquote.
Just, that. Those were his words. The words, there was an explosion.
Just, it happened.
Like,
This has got to be an interesting read, I've got to say. The uncut.
Yeah, like, if you ever just want to go and, like, read J. Marion Sims' The Story of My Life, it's amazing. I was so excited the entire, like, just reading through it.
It sounds like a pretty interesting writer.
Oh, yeah.
the way he writes.
Yeah, usually really old autobiographies and medical textbooks and all those things are like super dry and dumb.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that he had an autobiography that was also kind of a medical textbook.
Yeah.
But then he just didn't cut anything out. Right. So we know about the time that he was just hanging out in the woods with 120 other men staring at Native Americans. Like, yeah. How dare you?
Right.
And we know about the time that he got diarrhea for 10 pages.
Yes.
And
the
like,
time he did not put a finger up that woman's butt. Did not.
And you're just like, did no one edit this? Like,
his kids were like, read the first chapter. They're like, I don't want to read the rest. I just don't want to read it. So just publish it. Like, just publish it. It's on him.
Did no one edit this? Like, any of his surviving children could have been like, you know, we should probably go through Dad's like 184 page long memoirs and make sure he doesn't say anything embarrassing. But they didn't.
They just had it out for him. They're like, we know Dad.
I am so thankful.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, they were just like, whatever. And and they have all of his letters. Like, every letter he ever wrote is attached in an appendix in the back.
What? That's pretty interesting.
So all the letters where he tried to, like, woo Teresa, and he's like, I know we are cousins, but...
I did not put a finger up there. Don't worry, Terry. Oh, man.
J. Marion Sims is a national treasure.
All right. I'm glad there's a statue of him in State Park.
In Central Park, yeah. So he figures out, well, if I inflate the vagina with air, I can do surgeries
all sorts of stuff,
on it. And so thank you, Mrs. Merrill, for getting attacked by a pig. You changed freaking women's health forever.
Forever, yeah.
Let me re-say this again. Thank you, Mrs. Merrill, for getting attacked by a pig. You changed women's health forever.
And I guess it's partially the pigs of Alabama, you know, in a roundabout way.
Have
bacon is what we crave. Sometimes treating terrible pig wounds ends up good for
those
modern.
Deeps...
It's some kind of weird pig shamanism, but. But it's good to be thankful.
I just kind of realized a little bit that hogs, like...
Maybe that's what we're discovering with this podcast, that like maybe they're super intelligent and like they've known all along.
Like a pig did 5% of the work for inventing modern gynecology.
There you go. Plus they're awesome analogs, you know? People use them to test surgeries all the time, so there you go.
So anyways, bam, he's got this idea. Oh my God, if I inflate vaginas, I can, like, do surgeries.
Mm-hmm.
So he remembers that he has a private hospital on his residence, right? For free blacks and enslaved people. So that they're not at, like, the main hospital because it's segregation, duh. So he has a private hospital. And he remembers that there's a woman named Betsy at the hospital with a vesicovaginal fistula.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like, God.
Number one, they're there.
Yeah. So he runs and he buys a pewter spoon.
Okay.
And we know what kind of spoon it was. And we also know where he bought it from. Because
Jake's
again,
Hardware.
Yeah, man. Because once again, he included everything. It's so good.
I like how he runs.
Yeah, so he immediately, he like retroverts this one uterus and he's like, oh my God. And he runs and buys a spoon, right? Mm-hmm. And he goes and he gets like his two junior doctors, like his assistants.
Right.
So he goes with his two doctors, his junior assistants, and a newly purchased pewter spoon. And he just shows up and he's like, Betsy. And he's like holding the pewter spoon while he's like, the pewter spoon while he's like gesturing and talking. He's like, Betsy, may we examine you? And like, just imagine being Betsy, right?
Oh, yeah.
Incredibly brutal slave system. You've got this horrible injury where there's just, there's like urine constantly leaking out of you.
And you've already been told that there's nothing they can do about it by probably the most respected doctor
in Montgomery. Yeah. Yeah, you know, like, you know that he treats free blacks and Jewish people, and that he's like, everyone goes to him for like crazy surgeries. Mm-hmm. And he just shows up in the doorway with two other dudes and a spoon.
Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Like, come on.
Mm-hmm.
So Betsy was like, I guess. Right? And so Betsy turned over and rested her head on her hands. Sims positioned the medical students so that one might grab a buttock each.
Mm-hmm.
They pulled them apart and Sims inserted the spoon handle. He stared in awe as, I saw everything as no man had ever seen before.
Did he really write it? It says no man has seen before. Is that a direct quote?
That is a direct quote.
I don't want to laugh because it's like pretty serious business, but just the way he writes is amazing.
It's so, yeah, right?
As no man had ever seen before.
Right, like.
Bless this, Peter. So he had like the first speculum or.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
But speculums had already existed, so someone had totally seen this, but yeah. I saw everything as no man had ever seen before. This is either hyperbole or an indication of the undue influence of Victorian sexual mores upon medical knowledge.
Hmm.
Right? So, God, I love this guy. I saw everything as no man had ever seen before. Like, no, you're not the first dude to look inside of a, like, a fully inflated vagina.
Mm.
Right? And then, like, later on, you know, I just want to talk about how he would inflate them. Mm. So he had, like, a little bellows, and he'd be like, and, like, it was totally a thing. And it worked surprisingly well, right?
Right,
and, like,
yeah.
They did that for decades afterwards. They would just be like, all right, sure, fucking...
Yeah, yeah.
Full of air. So he goes, he examines Betsy. He's like, huh, I can fix that.
Yeah.
So he sees, like, where the hole is, and he figures it out, and he's like, I could probably fix that. Dang. So he goes and he says he ransacked the country for cases, right? So he goes and he finds about a half dozen enslaved women. And he ends up operating on them a lot. So he goes and he's so excited. And he goes and he adds an entire extra story to his hospital. So now it's like two stories tall.
Wow.
There's a bunch more beds. He puts in like a little room so that there's always a caretaker that can go around and like take care of all of these like women that he's bringing in. And because they are enslaved, he has to go and talk to the people that enslaved them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, look, I'll take care of them. I'll feed them. I'll do this. All you have to do is pay their taxes. So pay the taxes on them. I'll handle all the rest and I'll get them back up and working in no time. And the guys are like, okay.
Right.
That's not the worst deal ever.
Yeah, yeah.
And so suddenly, you know, he's got six patients.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he goes and there are only three that he mentions by name.
Mm-hmm.
There's Betsy, who he did the first examination on. There's a woman named Lucy, who he goes and he actually performs the first surgery on.
Okay.
And then there's Anarka.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So the woman that literally saved his life when he was dying of malaria.
He's drawing a new surgery on her.
He is now performing new surgeries and on Anarka.
That's cool.
Yeah, that was... When I read that originally, I was
like,
no!
Yeah. But her name's Anarka, too. It's like, that doesn't seem like a super common name.
Yeah, if it had been like two Marys, I would have been like...
Yeah, like, it's a Mary.
But Anarka. Right? So, and here's the thing. He actually helped Anarka deliver her baby.
Wow.
Yeah. So, it's really interesting how, like, Sims's life, even though he doesn't realize it or focus on it much, very much intertwined with the life of Anarka, right? So, yeah. So, it's December freaking 1845.
Mm-hmm.
And he performs the first surgery on Lucy, okay? So here's the thing. There's a dozen doctors in attendance, like local doctors that wanted to watch, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they wanted to like look at the, like view the surgery. And there's no anesthesia.
Mm.
No anesthesia. And he goes in and he's already examined her and he's like performing the surgeries. So she has a massive gash where she's missing part of her bladder.
Yeah.
Right. And he plugged that with a sponge, tied mm-hmm. everything up with silk string. Right. And he did that within an hour and all the doctors were like, well, good job, Sims. And they all leave.
Uh-huh.
But here's the thing. She gets incredibly sick.
Mm.
Because he put a freaking sponge inside of her.
Yeah, lodged that in there.
Yeah, so this like bacteria-ridden foreign object, within a few days, is just full of pus and urine and blood.
Mm.
And she nearly dies of blood poisoning. And Sims has to go over and he tears the sponge out. Mm. But he looks at the fistula again and noticed that it had started to like come together. It was smaller.
Mm-hmm.
But a small fistula is still a fistula. You have to figure out a way like... Right. So the worst fistula actually occurred in Anarka.
Hmm.
Yeah. So the exterior wall of her vagina was entirely like damaged and torn. And the like barrier between the vagina and rectum was like cut. And so it was bad. Great streams of urine constantly soaked her legs and clothing. The flesh around her genitals burned and bubbled, and it looked like smallpox. And intestinal gases leaked from day and night. She suffered.
Yeah, no doubt.
Lord, how she suffered. And so he's in there, and he's like, I'm going to fix this. And eventually it gets to the point where people stop showing up because he keeps doing all these experimental exploratory surgeries. And he can make the fistulas smaller, but he can't completely close them.
Yeah.
And so it takes 4 years.
Wow.
4 years of like near constant surgery and testing. And I actually do want to talk about very briefly about how like Lucy and Betsy and Anarka are the ones that he performs the most surgeries on.
Mm-hmm.
He eventually had performed 30 surgeries and on Anarka alone.
Wow.
And it got to the point where all three of those women are just as adept at like performing the surgeries and helping and examining as like he is or any doctors around, probably more so than the other doctors, right? So they're very much a part of this process.
No doubt.
Like they had no choice about being there, but once they were there, they were like, well, I'm gonna figure it out, right?
Yeah. What else are you gonna do when you're stuck getting surgeries done on you over and over?
Exactly. So one night he's staring at a ceiling and it's about 3 a.m. Right. And he thinks about forceps and he's like, oh my God. So he like wakes up, turns his wife over, immediately starts like telling her in depth this new surgery procedure he's going to use. And she's like, okay, cool. Go back to bed. Right. So he decides to use a perforated suture. So that's a partially divided lead pellet, usually like a musket ball, secured by strong compression to tie off sutures inside the human body.
Ah.
Right?
To like kind of pinch it together, I guess.
Absolutely. So they're going to do that. So using the forceps to grip them tightly and perforated shots or a perforated suture, he calls it a perforated shot. I had to look it up. I had to go through like three old school medical textbooks. I'm here to tell you.
What the heck it was.
It was two halves of a lead musket ball clamped together really tightly. It was real painful.
No doubt because the lead's soft enough that you can like squash it together and it like kind of it'll mold and hold.
Look at it, guys. We
mold
did this
and hold
did this one with a nurse. He's got all these fancy terms. mold and hold. So all right, so June 1849, hey, almost 4 or 5 years to the day from the first one. Lucy once again has the first like new surgery.
Yeah.
All right. So he uses a silk thread. She gets an infection, nearly dies. Eventually you'd think someone would be like, quit using silk thread.
Yeah.
You idiot.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing? So he finds actually a little bit of brass wire on the ground and he's like, oh my God, what have I used? Silver wire.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, how'd you get to silver from brass? The Olympics don't exist yet. Uh-huh. Shut up, dude. All right. So he goes to a guy named Mr. Swan. Once again, he has like all the store names, everyone in. So Mr.
Credit
Swan.
Credit where credit's due, Mr. Swan.
Exactly. Mr. Swan, who's the local jeweler. And he's like, I need you to make tiny silver wires. And so he does. Mr. Swan makes the wires. All right. So silver has antibacterial properties. Like, that's a thing
and
that we've known.
Blood clotting properties, yeah.
So like silver sutures, great idea, right? So I'm just gonna this is like the last five paragraphs, actually, because this was like a five-part series on Hunt's villain. So I'm just gonna read the final few paragraphs. All right, so when Sims chose silver for his new sutures, he knew that it worked, but did not understand the metal's antibacterial properties. That doesn't matter right now. Mm-hmm. Right now it is 1849. Anarka is prepped and ready for her 30th operation. J. Marion Sims examines his instruments one last time. Four silver wires are run through four perforated sutures, and forceps are clamped together to form four perfect little knots. In this moment, there are two eras. Childbirth before Anarka's surgery and childbirth after. A week goes by and it is time to remove the sutures. She is lifted onto the operation table and a speculum inserted. There is no inflammation, no tumification, nothing unnatural, and a very perfect union of the little fistula. Lucy and Betty soon underwent the same operation. J. Marion Sims eventually left Alabama. He came to this state and made a name for himself, and alighted from this place to more haughty endeavors, like the establishment of a women's clinic in New York City and tours of Europe. His methodical approach evolved quickly and spread across the industrialized world. It soon attracted other physicians with other theories and became its own branch of medicine, gynecology. Some semblance of Sims's methods are still used today to fight the scourge of fistula across the developing world. Women who experience traumatic childbirth might be healed by a single surgery and their lives greatly improved. Accordingly, a statue of J. Marion Sims stands to this day in New York City's Central Park. Anarka, Betsy, Lucy, and the other women at the little clinic in the corner of Sims's yard did not get to leave Alabama. They did not receive plaudits nor commendations, and unfortunately exist only in the memories of those who read Sims's works. Indeed, once they received their cures, they returned to life as an enslaved person. Yet they suffered, offered advice, assisted in surgeries, and were as much a part of the search for the cure as Sims himself. Where's their statue?
Yeah. And it's amazing. Like, that whole story is amazing just with Anarka. Like, she most likely saved his life.
Yeah.
And he ended up doing the same thing and, like, reducing her. Like, that's awesome that you just think about that. And these people that are so far removed in like class and stature at that time, and like if one wasn't there,
the other one wouldn't be.
Yeah It's like, man, yeah. that's an amazing history story, man.
Thank
that's
you
a, that is an, a, that that one right in the feels.
That is
sure.
That is what we strive for at Huntsville.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm not doing it now, but if I ever get like more famous if I ever get famous,
super famous,
yeah, I would want to start like a Kickstarter or a fundraising thing for like a statue of Lucy, Betsy, and Anarka.
For sure, man, that'd like, be amazing.
In Montgomery,
uh-huh.
I was driving around, and like the thing that pissed me off the most about Montgomery mm-hmm. was that there was like no parking for the Civil Rights Museum, but freaking White House of the Confederacy. They were like, look at all this available parking, and like all of it was full. And I was like, this is the wrong history.
Right.
Like, so yeah, if I ever had more money, I would totally like try and get a statue.
For sure.
Yeah.
And silver. Make it out of silver.
That would be so expensive.
Just make it look like it's made out of silver or something.
We can each have them holding like a silver thread.
There you go.
Yeah.
You're much more. When I'm like, is this statue just make it out of gold? It looks cool.
Yeah. No one will totally chip off their hands. Yeah.
That's another thing that you in all these old accounts, it's like there's so many leagues, huge amounts of people that are just looked over, unnamed, or just like not titled or just counted.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like each one of those people are like, and sometimes the majority of the population in down here.
Yeah, man.
It's like Man, that's a lot of, that's an amazing, like, just chunk of history that we can't see good, you know?
That's,
that we just can't, we have to, like, just ponder over because they've been just ignored in some ways.
I mean, heck pondering, like, yeah. I want to say stronger words, but this is like, you know,
yeah,
like, but there's, we can find stuff.
Oh yeah.
Like, I've found bills of sale for mm-hmm. people. I know some people's names. So, like, yeah, like,
yeah,
we can find stuff. It's just putting in the work, and not a lot of people want to do that.
Right. But I'm so glad we're doing this too, just because I mean, people are so wily about the past, you know, they're like so scared of the past, but there's so much to learn, guys. There is so much. But man, there's you can't top that story, guys. I don't know what else to say.
I mean, if you go and you look in the past, sometimes you'll come across something and see it as no man ever has before.
Yeah. Oh man. I hope that's like on his tombstone. It's just like saw like no man ever saw before. All it takes just a pewter spoon like draped over his.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't laugh. But yeah.
I think the man of such words.
But yeah. So if you have nothing else to do for like a week, go read J. Marion Sims's book.
Man, yeah. And those who are brave enough to come to Alabama will find some interesting things that can be said for sure.
Even when he had the diarrhea, like he was on like a stagecoach and he's still like taking notes and talking about like, now Captain Hodges told me this.
And I ate a bunch of weeds off the side of the road and it did not help, guys. But this spring I'm coming to.
I just got off that stagecoach and got on the next one from Mississippi. And I tell you... But yeah.
Like, oh man. Well, guys, check out the blog. It is the anniversary.
Mm-hmm. And
1 year strong. We need to get some like Huntsvillian brand mustaches and hats or something. I'm thinking that's people want those.
If you're interested, we're actually running a new series right now.
Yeah.
Based off of slum clearances in Huntsville in the 1850s.
That sounds like it could be brutal.
There's a great photo of a congressman setting a poor person's house on fire.
There it is.
So, yes.
Yes. But yeah, check it out. It's 1 year strong, man.
Yeah, man.
I'm excited.
So am
and
I.
And then we'll do the 1 year podcast and it'll be even better. Yeah. All right, guys, we'll check it out. Huntsvillian.wordpress.com, correct?
You got it,
and
bud.
You want to give them your email just in case they want to holler at us? We're always ready to be punching bags, guys.
We were actually talking about this earlier. If you want to send us hate mail.
Yeah, come on.
We said the hardest thing about making stuff is not...
getting feedback.
It's not getting feedback. It's not like, ah, you suck. It's the silence.
Yeah, so if you love it or hate it, or it's very, send us an email. It's just,
if you could take 5 minutes out of your day to tell me that I'm the most mediocre person you've ever heard of, I'm okay with that. So HSVLN1819 at gmail.com. Huntsvillian, followed by the year that Alabama became a state, at gmail.com. HSVLN1819.
At gmail.com. And thanks to the pigs, guys. Really?
Always. I do it for the hogs. Huntsvillian.
The Huntsvillian is a podcast recorded at Spice Rack Studios in Huntsville, Alabama. You can find the full blog, Huntsvillian, at huntsvillian.wordpress.com or their Facebook.com/Huntsvillian. And you can email John O'Brien at hsvln1819@gmail.com. The podcast is hosted and written by John O'Brien and co-hosted and produced by Ben Job. Thank you to our donors and volunteers who are the sole supporters of Spice Radio. If you want to help Spice Radio be great, go to spice-radio.com/support. And you can always find great local music and content 24/7 at spice-radio.com. Thanks again for listening and stay spicy, Huntsville.